Following along this morning, we're in the last book of the Old Testament, Malachi chapter 3. We're going to look at verses 13 through 18 this morning. You know, a Texas farmer was touring England. He happened to meet an English farmer and asked him, "What size farm do you have?" The Englishman proudly announced, "35 acres. 35 acres, the Texan scoffed at him. "Why, I can get in my truck at 8 a.m. and start driving, and at noon, I'm still on my farm. I can eat lunch and start driving again, and at 5 p.m., I'm still on my farm." "Ah, yes," the Englishman nodded in understanding. "I had a truck like that once." You know, at the time of the writing of Malachi, the nation of Israel had strayed far from God. Evil abounded in the land. Unbelief prevailed. The majority of people went their own sinful ways, giving little thought of the will of the ways of God. They laughed at the prophets and showed contempt for God and His law. They were kind of like that Texan. They were full and proud of themselves. They were back in the land of Judah, and they were thought that they were running their own show there. Of course, the Romans were really running the show, but they were in their land, and they thought they had a handle on it. With that mind, God listens, and God speaks to them through the prophet Malachi. We've all heard the expression, you know, walls have ears, walls have eyes, and expressions like that. Well, God really is listening to us today. In our text this morning, Malachi 3, verse 13, starting verse 13, "Your words have been arrogant against me, says the Lord. Yet you say, what have we spoken against thee? You have said, it is vain to serve God. And what profit is it that we have kept his charge and that we have walked in mourning before the Lord of hosts? So now we call the arrogant blessed. Not only are the doers of wickedness built up, but they also test God and escape. Then those who feared the Lord spoke to one another, and the Lord gave attention and heard it. And a book of remembrance was written before him for those who fear the Lord and who esteem his name. And they will be mine, says the Lord of hosts. On the day that I prepare my own possession, I will spare them as a man spares his own son who serves him. So you will again distinguish between the righteous and the wicked, between one who serves God and one who does not serve him." The people are saying that God was inconsequential, insignificant, and irrelevant. They thought that God was absolutely powerless to do anything about anything in their lives. So as a nation, they were ignoring him. He was unimportant to them. Now that's not much different than today's attitude. You can go places where the Bible is just a bunch of good sayings, and the church is just an organization of people socializing and helping people. That's what you'll get out of those places. Or you'll go places and they won't consider giving to a church like giving to a secular charity. Because it goes for all that gospel and stuff and spreading of that gospel, and that's utter nonsense and that's foolishness. We need to help people. We need to get directly out there and give them some charity. Well, they were like that back then too. You know, arrogance can cause you a lot of trouble. There was a former heavyweight boxer named James Quick Tillis. He's a cowboy from Oklahoma who fought in Chicago in the early 80s. He still remembers his first day in the Windy City and his arrival from the city of Tulsa. He said, "I got off the bus with two cardboard suitcases and under my arms in downtown Chicago, and I stopped in front of the Sears Tower. I put my suitcases down, I looked up at that tower, and I said to myself, I'm going to conquer Chicago. When I looked down, my suitcases were gone." You know, we can lift ourselves up, we can look high in this world and think that a lot of things are going to come our way, but there's always something there to knock us down and take us down a notch. In Joshua 24:15, you know, back in the beginning of Israel, when they settled in the Promised Land, Joseph challenged the people there to choose for yourself this day whom you will serve. Now, if you remember Joshua, he led them to victory and led them into the Promised Land. He was the one who said that with God's help, we can defeat these giants here. He had no fear following God. And he told them, choose whom you're going to follow today. Choose the one you're going to listen to. And the people responded, far be it from us to forsake the Lord to serve other gods. It was the Lord our God himself who brought us and our fathers up out of Egypt and the land of slavery and performed those great signs before our eyes. He protected us in our entire journey and among all the nations through which we traveled. And the Lord drove out before us all the nations who lived in the land. We too will serve the Lord because he is our God. And that's a great statement from Joshua 24:16 through 18. It's a wonderful proclamation. And it's a wonderful proclamation we probably make when we first accept God. When we first come out of that watery grave of baptism to walk anew in the new life. Those are probably words that would echo in our mind. But how soon they went astray. How soon they turned to worshiping those other gods. It didn't take them long. And that generation of Israelites is faithful to its vow. Far be it for us to forsake the Lord, because he is our God. They did not forget him or ignore him. But not long after that generation, they fell away. By the time of Malachi, the nation of Israel had turned almost completely away from God. Listen to what God is telling them there. You have said harsh things against me. Terrible things against God himself. Blaspheming him. How terrible that is. You have said it is futile to serve God. What did we gain by carrying out his requirements? They were saying, what did it profit them to follow God? What did it take? They gave their sacrifices. They gave their tithes. What did it get them but conquer? They couldn't see why they were conquered. They looked at themselves and they were haughty, they were proud. And they looked at themselves and thought, I'm not a bad person. I don't need God. He hadn't done anything for me, is what they're telling him. God had done nothing for them that they could see. Malachi 3:16-18. He goes on to talk about those that would be his treasured possession. Those that he heard talking. You know, we think God only hears us when we talk to him. When we open up that line of prayer, you know, I guess we get so used to the phone. No one can hear me unless I get on the phone. If I call someone and communicate with them, no one can hear me. But the walls have ears. God hears those of his people. He knows our struggles. He knows our innermost thoughts. He knows everything about our being. And he listens to them. Now those faithful there were suffering too. They went through all the same captivity that the bad people went through. They went through all that too. Yet they didn't deserve it. But they remained faithful. Couple of things. First of all, it shows the old devil that in adversity, even when it's not deserved, people can remain faithful to God. Secondly, it shows the wicked the way, the proper way, to redemption. And of course, they did get back to their land, at least the southern kingdom, and lived there, although it was under someone else's rule many times. You know, they talked about the evildoer prospering. You know, we always someone asks, why does bad things happen to good people? Why do good things happen to bad people? Why do they get away with it? Some people go to their grave and never pay for their sins on this earth that we can see. But if we trust God, we have faith in God, they're going to get their reward if they're good, and they're going to get their punishment if they're bad. If you seek riches in this world, and you seek that gain by any means possible, you've already gotten your reward. That means there's no reward waiting for you later. Sound familiar? Is our nation going through that same pattern of behavior? We see it day in and day out. Let's listen to a few verses of Malachi. Then those who feared the Lord talked with each other, and the Lord listened and heard. A scroll of remembrance. Think of that. God's writing this down. And when we think of the book of life, when we think about God writing down the activities of people, and when we think about those awful things being read back to those people before they're sent to their punishment, and of course for the righteous, that the blood of Christ covers that and gets us through. But he was going to write down and remember. You know, we write notes a lot. If I write a note, I can put it in my pocket, never look at it again, and remember what I wanted to do. But if I don't write a note, there's a good chance I might forget it. I don't know if you're the same way, but, you know, post-it notes came out, and people like to apply those here and there and remind themselves of stuff, put a note, put a list, a grocery list or something like that, for important things we need to do. Because it's important we write it down. And God wrote down what these faithful were going through, what they were saying, his precious possession, his faithful that were there. Even though a great majority of the people had turned their backs on him, God still had people who honored and worshiped him and sought to do his will. Not unlike today. God heard him. And the Bible teaches us that he hears our prayers. We pray, and he promised to hear and answer our prayers. Do we believe it today? Do you feel it deep in your bones that God is going to answer your prayers and that God is going to work it out? God heard their prayers. However, it doesn't say they were praying. Verse 16 says, those who fear the Lord talked with each other, and the Lord listened and heard. God hears us every time. He hears our thoughts. We don't always have to be praying to him for him to know what's going on in our hearts and our minds and our souls. Even though there were only a small group in this nation, God was paying attention to them. They talked with God, worshipped him, and discussed his wonderful ways. And as they did, God listened to their conversation, just as he's listening to us this morning. He's listening to everything we hear, everything we say. He's listening to our thoughts right now, what's going through our minds. Are we focused on him? Are we fleeting away to the world and its many problems? Are we focused on what he wants us to hear this morning? The mighty of this world may speak and be heard by the multitudes, but God hears and listens to his faithful few whose minds are on him constantly. That has not changed. That is still true today. There are people out there who can get in front of their own audiences and enthrall millions and make movies and see many. But God's not listening to the world. He's listening to you. He's listening to me. He's listening to that small, humble soul that empties itself of all its pride, that knows it's a sinner, that knows without God's help we're lost, and he listens. He hears us in those quiet times. He writes it down so it can be remembered forever. You know, we like to put our children's pictures on the refrigerator, and you know, we just marvel at the talents that they have, or how that picture looked better than the stick figure maybe a few years before. And we're just so proud of them growing and learning. And that's how it is with God. God sticks, like on a refrigerator, what his children say, what they do, what they accomplish. All those things. His love is focused on us. If his love wasn't focused on us, would Jesus have died for us? Would that great a price have been paid if God doesn't listen to us? If God doesn't pay attention to us? God pays attention to us. He's listening. His treasured possession. Now in the Hebrew, treasured possession means segillah. And it's often translated as jewels or treasure. So we are his precious jewels. We are those things of beauty that he created. that he wants to save. You know, they're reminded, they remain true to God. It tells that they feared God. They held him in awe, and because of that, they remained true to him. They believed in his power. They believed in his power to save, just as they believed in his power to punish the wicked, just as they believed that they would be vindicated and that the Messiah would come and save them from their condition. It was a time when it wasn't easy to stay faithful to God. Corruption was everywhere. Hypocrisy abounded. Evil ruled today. And we could very easily say that we're talking about today, but they were talking about yesterday. Again, the more things change, the more they stay the same. You see, it's never been easy to follow God's ways. We know that. It's difficult sometimes. But God has always had a remnant of people throughout time. The remnant said, even though everyone else cursed God, we will praise his name. Even though they said God was useless, that God did nothing for them, they paid no counsel to that. They did not listen to it. They didn't give it a moment's notice, but praised God. And that's how we have to be today. We have to ignore all the things that people throw our way and try to diminish God and try to diminish us as people who call us silly and foolish and believe in fables and fairy tales and things like that. We don't believe in fairy tales. We believe in God. They stood for righteousness in a wicked nation. They endured the ridicule of family and friends. And God looked down on these people and said they would be his possession. You know, in 1947, a professor at the University of Chicago was scheduled to teach an advanced seminar in astrophysics. At the time, he was living in Wisconsin doing research. He planned to commute twice a week for the class, even though it would be held during the harsh winter months. Registration for the seminar, however, fell below their expectations. Only 2 students signed up for the class. Now, people expected for him to cancel the class so that he wouldn't waste his time. But for the sake of 2 students, he taught the class, commuting 100 miles round trip through backcountry roads in the dead of winter. His students did their homework. 10 years later, in 1957, those 2 students won a Nobel Peace Prize for physics, and in 1983, so did the professor. Only a handful, but what a handful. Christians may be few, the world may be many, but just a handful of people can change the world. One person probably changed our lives. One person probably taught us the gospel. One person probably encouraged us to accept the gospel. And we were saved. It only takes one. It only takes a few. As long as God is listening, God is going to make it happen. They talked with God. They didn't talk about all the things that were happening. They didn't talk about other stuff of life. They talked about God. They talked about the wonder of God, the beauty of God. They talked about his promise to send the Messiah. They talked about what God would do for them. They believed in him. You ever notice how eager someone in love seems to be to talk to the person or who she loves? You know, sometimes we might be able to hear our kids' giggly conversations with those they love, and you know, pretty soon it's you hang up first. No, you hang up, and crazy things like that kids do, and they just can't be without the person. They think of all in minds. You look at their notebooks, and they're writing their name over and over again, writing hearts and things like that. They're just enraptured with this person and in love with this person. You know, the fellow who loves football gravitates to those who share his passion for the game and talks about it constantly, or baseball or basketball, whatever. The same could be said about politics. Politicians and political people, they'll gravitate to those conversations, camping, or any other number of things that people love. They can be attracted. But how much does your Christianity mean to you today? Is it real? Has it made a difference in your life? Do you like to talk about it? Do you like to talk with others like they did back then? And talk about those great promises. And talk about the problems that we have and how to overcome them. You know, the psalmist said, Blessed is the man that does not walk in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stand in the way of sinners, nor sit in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. Psalm 1:1. David opens up all his psalms with that great one right there. What's the focus of our lives? What do we think about? What do we do in our lives to meditate and think about God? Whether it's the nation of Israel in Malachi's day or our nation today, it's still true. You know, there's a great old song, "How Great Thou Art." You know, just a great song, wondering at the wonderment of God and how great He is and what He's framed this whole world, this whole universe, and the power He has. We need to focus on God. We need to lose that worldly attitude of arrogance and pride. We need to not let the world get at us with these ideas that God doesn't pay attention to, that God doesn't exist, that God's not there, that God's not going to hear you, that God doesn't answer prayers, and that God doesn't hear our conversations. He does, and He will answer those prayers. He will take care of us. It may not look like it to the world, but we can see it in our eyes. A young businessman had just started his own firm. He had rented a beautiful office and had it furnished with antiques. Sitting there, he saw a man coming to the outer office. Now, he wanted to appear busy. You know, he just started his business. He wanted to seem like he was a hustling and bustling businessman. So he picked up the phone and started to pretend he was having a big deal working, talking numbers with his fictitious personal on the other line and trying to seal the deal. He threw huge figures around, you know, like they were nothing, and made giant commitments of what he would do. And finally, he hung up the phone and he asked the visitor, "Can I help you?" The man said, "Yes, I'm with the telephone company. I'm here to install your phone." So he sat there in his embarrassment. You know, too often we try to put on this face of pride and arrogance. We try to put on this face of self-sufficiency. We try to be like Randolph Scott and John Wayne and all those heroes from the movies we remember when we were younger, and try to be tough. But the fact of the matter is, we're all sinners, and we can't have eternity without Christ. We all fall and fail and stumble around each day, but God, only God can pick us up. And we're living now in an economy that may hurt us, may hurt our children. And, you know, that's kind of disheartening. But just like these people in that day, don't think that God is not listening to you. If you'll empty yourself of pride and arrogance, if you'll open up your heart and let God in, break down that tough exterior and let Him in and work in your life, He can hear you. Like the song says, He can make you what you ought to be. He can make you new again. He can renew your spirit. He can give you the hope that you need in life. You can't fool God, but we can fool ourselves, like the young man tried to do to someone else. Arrogance, pride, apathy can make us do some silly things. God is real. His promise is real. He hears our prayers and listens to the conversation of our lives. Don't give up on Him and rely on yourself. Rely on God, and He will not give up on you. I don't know what your condition is this morning or what your needs may be, but if you have need, won't you come as we stand and sing, song, and take it.